Talking about the safety and efficacy of vaccines has become an incredibly controversial topic, a taboo, increasingly, in our society. In fact, there are legislators and others who would prefer we no longer talk about this. The science is done, they say. It's all in. Vaccines are safe and they're effective. But what if Forrest Merriti is right? We ought to have this conversation while we still can. And if you are a doctor or a scientist or an immunologist, call in. Tell Forrest where he's wrong, why he's wrong. I think he'd be open to it. We need to have this conversation, and we will, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Forrest, I can imagine there are a number of people out there thinking this conversation is irresponsible. And what you're going to do is you're going to place doubt in people's minds who might be on the fence about whether to vaccinate or not vaccinate their children. For those who don't vaccinate, they are leaving them wide open to, you know, getting some horrible, debilitating disease. What do you say to those people who say this is irresponsible?
Well, fortunately, that's not the case. Most of these diseases which we vaccinate for, the mortality of them was nearly zero before the vaccines were invented. Now, polio is an interesting one. I've done a whole book about it. Polio is essentially a man-made problem. There are several enteroviruses which are capable of causing paralysis under certain conditions. Poliovirus is one of them, but there are several. The polio vaccine in first world countries with food supplies that aren't coated in pesticides such as lead, arsenate, or DDT, they will never have a problem with paralytic polio, meaning epidemic forms of it. So as someone who's researching this, you can essentially strike off polio from your list instantly. I certainly would if it were me, because we don't coat our food with DDT or lead arsenate anymore. Now, some people may argue the glyphosate or Roundup has its own set of problems, and that's true, but it doesn't appear to be enough to cause the issue of paralysis from an enteroviral infection. Now, many of these other illnesses have their own set of variables that make the vaccinations not as crucial as people would think. Diphtheria, we now know, sanitation improvements have helped prevent the spread of the infection, but it appears that there's a cyclic phase of a thing called a bacteriophage, which actually infects the bacteria and upregulates a genetic component of the diphtheria bacteria that cause it to create those dangerous toxins. And that was why it appeared. It's pretty evident that diphtheria infections have existed for thousands of years and aren't normally a problem. You can go through all the different childhood illnesses, and some are like pertussis, whooping cough. No one wants their kid to get that. It's a horrible infection. I would never want my kid to get that. You know, you hear stories about people purposefully taking their children to get chickenpox infections because if you get it as a child, it's an innocuous infection. It only seems to cause problems later on in life. Whooping cough is not that way. If you have a baby that's incapable of coughing because their abdominal sheath is not strong enough to create the coughing reflex, it's going to be a nasty infection. The problem is the vaccine contains aluminum in it, which is a neurotoxin, and the vaccine creates a temporary immunity in a way that seems to cause some other problems. So to summarize, for all of the illnesses that we have childhood vaccines for, they all come with a cost. You know, nothing is free. You can see this with antibiotics. Everyone readily accepts that antibiotics are a trade-off. You get some help from an infection, but we know we are all going to have to pay the piper one day when these antibiotic-resistant bacteria emerge, and there's nothing we can do about it. So we know we're sort of playing with fire with antibiotics, and we just hope that we're not alive when we have to pay the bill. Vaccines are that same way. Nothing is free. You're manipulating the immune system in ways where you're playing whack-a-mole. You know, sometimes some vaccines make other strains of a similar bacterial infection become more prevalent, and sometimes those strains are more deadly than the ones we were dealing with initially. So nothing is free. Everything has a cost. You'll have to pay now or you'll have to pay later. And it's always more expensive when you pay later. You know, the interest is always higher. So for someone who were to suggest that if someone believed me and were to stop vaccinating their children, I would say in a first world country, to me, it's a non-issue. These infections are so rare and so innocuous in general, and we have medical care to take care of them if they happen. If this were a third world country going through the stress of civil war with inadequate sanitation, hygiene, nutrition, or medical care, I might make an argument, okay, well, let's talk about them then. But even then, I don't think vaccines in general are worth the cost. Now, I'll just mention one other thing people will always bring up is about herd immunity. They will say, well, by you not having your children vaccinated or you not getting your vaccines, you are purposefully putting those who can't get vaccinated or who have compromised immune systems, you know, you're putting them at risk, and it's not fair to them. That's a complex subject because many vaccines don't protect other people. They're protection for yourself only. The whooping cough pertussis vaccine, for instance, it doesn't prevent the spread of the infection. It's almost like an anti-venom shot for a snake bite. It helps you as a person not cough so badly, but in terms of preventing the spread of the infection, it does nothing for it. And the reality is there are so many diseases and infections out there. There are thousands and thousands of them that we have no vaccines for. To suggest that somehow by skipping a measles vaccine for your child, you're putting someone else at risk, it is ridiculous when there are so many potential infections that an immune compromised person submits themselves by going out in public to every day. And in fact, these biological pharmaceuticals like Humira, if you've heard of Humira, it's an immune suppressing medicine, and it's basically making you immune compromised on purpose. And if it were me and my family, I wouldn't want to be around someone with that because they're likely to harbor infections, but because their immune system is so suppressed, they're unlikely to show symptoms of it. So there's a case many people would say they are more afraid of the immune compromised than immune compromised people should be of them. So it's a very tricky subject because every vaccine is different. Some provide the ability to prevent an infection from spreading when they work, which is not always, but many of them don't. And the reality is vaccines prevent so few infections in the whole scheme of things. For people to get all up in arms about herd immunity is a ridiculous virtue signaling that doesn't help anyone. It doesn't educate anyone as to the way these infections work.
Let's dive into the calls, Forrest. We have got a full board of lines here. First-time caller, Kathy, is in North Idaho. Kathy, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Hey, I want to thank Forrest for all the work he's done and his diligence in researching all this. And he's really articulate, and I really appreciate the fact that he's written a book that I can actually hopefully get, even on Amazon. My question for you, Forrest, please. I'm a grandmother. I have a granddaughter, and I do have a background in medical. I was a certified nurse assistant for about 20 years, and I have dealt with children and adults and so forth. And so I've seen a lot of illness, and I chose not to have my own two daughters vaccinated back in the 70s and the 80s. And they're very strong and healthy adult women today. And I'm glad that I resisted all that. But one daughter wanted to go with the AMA prescribed vaccination program, and her second daughter, my granddaughter, showed autistic symptoms. And when I mentioned this to my daughter about little Angelica, she said, "Well, the pediatrician told me, Mom, that she'll grow out of these symptoms." Some of her symptoms were that she ran away a lot. She had a kind of a vacant look in her eyes. She had a very restricted speech pattern, even at age 5. She was not at all gregarious. She wasn't even really sociable. And she just had this elsewhere look about her, and I knew that my daughter had chosen to get her vaccinated, especially with the MMR. So what do you say about a pediatrician that's going to say that, oh, they'll grow out of it?
Yeah, it's thanks for your kind words. I appreciate it, Kathy. Pediatricians are in a really tough spot because many of them have spent their entire careers administering hundreds, if not thousands, of children with vaccines. And if this is true, you know, what hundreds of thousands of parents and grandparents are saying is that their children were fine and something happened after their vaccinations. They're going to be in a really tough spot to deal with the cognitive dissonance that comes from realizing that they likely played a part in harming children. And no one wants that. No one in any side of this debate, whether you be a pharmaceutical CEO or a parent, no one wants to harm children. I believe everyone wants best for children. But there are more of them, to answer your question. Pediatricians are starting to come around, and I think the nurses are doing it first. The nurses, I think, are beginning to see, and they're the ones that often administer the shots themselves. They're the ones that have to do the immobilization and restraint. I think the nurses will be first. They are starting to speak up, and eventually more pediatricians will come around. You're starting to see some pushback from pediatricians already because of some of the socialized healthcare rules that are being put into place where pediatricians can no longer exercise free will in working with the parents to determine a vaccination schedule that works for them. And you're starting to see pushback from it. But it's going to take a while. I mean, look, we're 70 some years after polio, and we still can't come to grips with the fact that polio was a man-made, paralytic polio was a man-made problem. So this one is going to take a long time. I mean, it really is. But I feel for you because pediatricians don't want to look. They don't want to see it. They don't want to admit it. It's going to be very, very difficult for pediatricians to come to terms with what's happened.
Kathy, thank you for the call.
I hope that answers your question.
Kathy, thanks for the call. Forrest, my concern is, and I don't care what side of the vaccine debate you're on, we may not be able to have this conversation for too much longer.
Yeah, it's a good point. I've sent out, you know, messages through my social media channels. You know, sign up for my email list because my Facebook page is likely to be deleted. My YouTube channel is likely to be deleted. Amazon may not carry my books forever. You know, the censorship happy world we live in will definitely come to this subject eventually. And to be honest with you, I believe it needs to happen. I believe it's the fire, the cleansing fire, you know, that resets the growth in the forest. Because there are a lot of people right now who are angry, but they're not angry enough. Now, thankfully, there are plenty of people who go to these rallies that are fighting government mandates to receive, you know, to remove vaccine exemptions. There are a lot of people that are working their tails off to try and protect these exemptions. But the reality is we need many more people doing this. We need, you know, 100 times more, 1,000 times more. So I'm not looking forward to being censored, but it is the spasmodic twitching of a dying cockroach whenever you see doctors suggesting that this conversation not even be allowed to happen, you know we're at the end game, right? When that happens, you know it's close to the end.
It's not just the doctors, though, Forrest. They have the politicians singing from the same, you know, the same songbook, and they have the mainstream media in lockstep. They're all sort of circling their wagons and saying, we don't want to talk about this anymore. It's over.
Yeah, it's getting close to blowing up completely when politicians who will listen to what the doctors say. Of course, the pharmaceutical lobby is the biggest lobby in the world. It's bigger than defense. And there are a lot of people whose careers and campaigns depend on that money coming in. A lot of media companies depend on pharmaceutical advertisements. And they're beholden to pharmaceutical companies. People don't believe that. They think that it's not that bad, but you've got to realize pharmaceutical lobby is the single biggest lobby in the world, as far as I know.
All right, we'll take a quick time out, and we'll take more calls on the other side. Here's Lulu taking us into the break with To Sir With Love on Coast to Coast AM. Hard to imagine, but we may be fast approaching a time when we aren't allowed to have this kind of conversation anymore on the airwaves, talking about the safety and efficacy of vaccines. So this may be one of your last opportunities to weigh in on this subject. Forrest Maridi, my guest, the author of The Autism Vaccine, The Story of Modern Medicine's Greatest Tragedy. And we'll get to your calls when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you live from Coast Toronto affiliate In-Depth Radio News Talk 1010. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-double-T. We have a lot of great comments and questions here, so I ask callers, please get right to your question for Forrest Maridi, and we will begin with Andy in the city of Commerce, California. Andy, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Excellent radio host. I really enjoy listening to you. And Forrest, you're doing a great job on behalf of the public. First of all, I'd like to say that in the last approximate 1 week, I heard on the news on two different broadcasts that they are trying to smear Dr. Is it Wakefield, Andrew Wakefield, stating that he has a special interest or investment, and that's why he came out with that story of the anti-MMR vaccine, and that he has no credibility. And I thought, you know, for them to make this major effort to smear him, they must be feeling some pushback from the public, number one. Number two, anyone knows that mercury or any kind of mercury derivative, if there's a toxic waste spill of any significance containing mercury, they have to call hazmat crews. And yet these people, these big pharma individuals and political forces have the nerve to put this derivative of a toxic waste material into the bodies of newborn babies. If that's not evil, then I don't know what is. And finally, I'd like to know some statistics on what percentage of doctors and scientists and big pharma people will have their children subjected to this criminal activity. And thanks for the great job you're both doing. Thank you.
Andy, thank you for that. Now, let me ask you first, let's talk about Dr. Wakefield. He was part of this Lancet study, 13 scientists from the Royal Free London Hospital. And here's the thing. As far as I know, Forrest, Dr. Wakefield never said anything about MMR causing autism. In fact, he said we did not find that to be the case. But he just said what? We need to look at the connection between the MMR vaccine and the leaky gut syndrome. Isn't that essentially what he said?
Yeah, that's what the paper was studying, the association between the MMR vaccine and gut issues. As a side topic, they mentioned in passing that some of the parents had said the MMR vaccine, they associated the MMR vaccine with the onset of these issues. And as you mentioned, the paper itself went out of its way to say we did not find an association between the MMR vaccine and the syndrome described, meaning autism. So, yeah, that to give you an idea of how easily triggered the establishment was, the paper concluded it could not find an association, and the paper was never designed to find an association anyway, but it was used as a scapegoat to vilify and try and demoralize anyone who would even suggest there might be an association.
And for that, they stripped him of his medical license, and he's now this pariah.
Yeah. It's important, real quick, that your listeners know this. There were never any charges of fraud brought against the doctors. You'll hear that repeated over and over, that he manipulated data. Dr. Wakefield himself had nothing to do with the data in the study. He did not conduct the examinations of the intestines of these children, and he did not interpret the data. He merely presented the data as it was given to him by someone else. So because of that, he never was charged with fraud for anything. They actually stripped him of his license because he obtained controlled blood samples. That means kids who did not have any issues. He needed some blood samples to compare with the children who had autism. And he obtained those blood samples in an unapproved manner, which was he did it at a children's birthday party. And the parents were there. They okayed it. They consented to it. But it wasn't within the rules of how these studies are conducted. So it was a mistake he made. It was a stupid mistake. But to insinuate that somehow he was nefariously trying to manipulate the results of the study, which clearly said the MMR vaccine had nothing to do with autism, you begin to see what a complete sham the entire stripping of his license and all that was. It was a ridiculous trial meant to scare anyone away from talking about a possible connection.
Okay. Now, Andy also mentioned mercury. Now, Thermosol, I believe, is that's a derivative of mercury, but that was used as a preservative in some vaccines, correct? But no longer, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there's some flu shots, multi-dose flu shots still contain some thimerosal, but initially obviously, any mercury is not good. It is a very, I think it's the first or second most toxic substance known to man. But I don't think, you know, particularly based on my research for the book, I don't think, personally, I don't think it plays as much of a role in autism as we thought. It certainly doesn't now because it's been removed, but it may have when it was very prevalent. And some people have suggested the nature of autism has changed a bit since mercury was removed. But it's not been the focus of my particular research. I've studied aluminum more and its effects on autoimmunity and chronic infection. So thankfully, mercury's been removed from most vaccines. The multi-dose vial flu vaccine is still a problem. Andy also mentioned real quickly, if I believe doctors or pharmaceutical reps, are they secretly not vaccinating their kids? I guess that's what he was asking.
Yes.
And my opinion is probably, I would say there's a mixture of it. I think they're like any parent. If they see something wrong happen with their child, they're very likely to react to that. Most people who are anti-vaxxers weren't born that way. You know, they vaccinated their children and then something happened. And then they decided that they wanted to skip certain vaccines or maybe skip them altogether. So unfortunately, most people who others would call anti-vaxxers are actually former vaccinating parents who stopped after something bad happened.
East of the Rockies, David is in Atlanta. David, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Yeah, I don't know who's right in this vaccination debate. Forrest, you sound very knowledgeable and very persuasive. I understand you're not a scientist and not a doctor, but as far as I'm concerned, that doesn't matter. I'm interested in the facts, not in credentials. But you know, of course, that the vast, vast majority of MDs, I think I heard a figure of 997 out of every 1,000, say vaccinations have been a godsend. All the medical societies say that. The school systems, and you mentioned this, all over the place require it to go to school. And so my question, Richard, is really for you, is I'm glad you've asked MDs to disagree with Forrest to call in, but why have you not presented both sides of this debate? Why did you not have somebody on from the AMA or the Pediatric Association or somebody like that to present an even-handed approach to something, an issue that literally can be an issue of life and death? And the question is not just for you, it's for George and it's for premier radio networks in general. This is what they do generally. They'll present only one side of an issue.
Well, I'll give you the answer, David, and it's very simple. I've been in talk radio for almost 30 years, and in those 30 years, I have never been able to put together a debate. I've had people who oppose vaccines come on. It's almost the same as the climate change debate. You will not get people who believe in anthropogenic global warming to sit down and debate someone who doesn't believe in anthropogenic global warming. They will not do it. They will tell you up and down the science is in. There's no debate. And it's the same thing with vaccinations. You cannot get a debate. They will not debate. Did you want to add to that, Forrest?
Yeah, there's two reasons for that, I believe. One is, I think the other side, I'll call them, if that's appropriate, they feel like they're validating my argument by debating it, and they don't want to do that. They assume that I'm in the minority, and that by debating it, it's only validating that I'm a serious threat. And I don't want to be a threat. I want to be a human being who cares about humanity and children's health. And let's just talk about it. There's no reason to have any animosity. And the other reason is most doctors, pediatricians, aren't taught much about vaccines in medical school. This may come as a shock to some people, but they are taught the vaccine schedule and how to administer it and spend more time learning about other things. So I, who've spent years studying vaccination and never went to medical school probably know more about vaccines than most pediatricians because I've focused my study on it. So your average pediatrician that any parent might take their child to for vaccinations is not going to know very much about vaccinations. They may know something about the immune system, but vaccinations specifically, such as the history or the way certain vaccines work or fail, they're not likely to know much about it. And this is a travesty. I believe all medical school students should spend a semester on learning medical history because there are so many mistakes that medicine has made that all physicians and nurses could use a good dose of humility before they start their careers. And thankfully, there are those physicians and nurses out there. There's just not enough of them.
All right. Let's say hi to Jesse in Vancouver, Canada. Jesse, on the international line, welcome to Coast.
When I looked into vaccines, the classical theory is very simple. We are trying to inject attenuated viruses into the body in order to generate antibodies. The surprising part is the classical vaccine is very ineffective. We'll be lucky if we get even 50% response. And that's why they add enhancers, which are called adjuvant in this field. And aluminum happens to be an adjuvant. My first question is, are they doing any research which would lead to discovery of adjuvants which are non-metallic in nature? Because that will take care of this problem, because as I understand, we don't understand how adjuvants work and why they enhance the effectiveness of the vaccine. That's the basic issue. After I received that answer, I do have some comments from personal experience with respect to some of the opinions the guest has, which may be subject to some correction on his part.
Good question, Jesse. Yes. I mean, you would think after 90 years, they would have found a replacement for aluminum as an adjuvant.
Yeah, they're dying. They're dying to find a replacement. They know, obviously, aluminum hydroxide is a neurotoxin. They know this. We know this. Everyone knows this. They're depending on it being such a low dose to feel like it's okay. No one wants these adjuvants in vaccines. Of course, no one wants them in there. Now, they are trying to find new ones. And in fact, the Gardasil vaccine, which has sort of become notorious for its horrible side effects, it employs a new hybrid form of an aluminum adjuvant that people are starting to wonder if it may be the reason why so many people seem to be harmed from it. Now, I know there is one other type of adjuvant that's under development, I believe by Merck, and I can't remember the name of it, but yes, unfortunately, the vaccines don't work very well without the adjuvant, and they don't want to use aluminum hydroxide. It's a horrible ingredient that no one wants children injected with. So I hope they're able to find a better one. I wish vaccines did not need adjuvants, but unfortunately they do. And in my mind, they make them not worth the cost.
Jesse, you have a follow-up question. If you could just keep it short. Thank you.
Sometimes the activists make a mistake in diminishing the concerns of the opposition, and that's how they reduce their own credibility. I'll just give you two quick examples. Just the way smallpox virus pool was human, and they eliminated that virus pool, and the disease is gone. Polio, we are almost there. There are just two or three countries left because of religious opposition that we are finding it difficult to eliminate polio because it has a human virus pool, and if we eliminate it, it will be gone just like smallpox. That's why I could not understand, unless the guest explained at some point, that this virus was man-made, because I have seen the harmful effect it can create. It can destroy lives, and we are almost there, and that's why I did not like the guest's statements concerning the polio vaccine, because it's almost like smallpox. We are almost there.
And all right, Jesse, let's get Forrest to respond.
Sure thing.
Smallpox vaccine?
I'll deal with polio first. Just so I'm clear, the paralysis from enteroviruses is a man-made problem. Poliovirus is one of many enteroviruses which can paralyze children whose intestines have been wrecked by pesticide use. In India, the polio vaccine has controlled paralysis from the poliovirus, but what you'll see is as poliovirus paralysis has gone down, acute flaccid myelitis has exploded to take its place. What's happening is whack-a-mole. Other enteroviruses, which are just as capable of paralyzing children as the poliovirus, have come up to take its place. So the problem is pesticides. There are DDT, as far as I know, is still legal in India. And if you don't take care of that problem, you can't stamp out childhood infantile paralysis with a polio vaccine, because there are several other enteroviruses waiting in the wing to take its place. And you can see that in the statistics in India.
We just have a few minutes. So smallpox, yes.
Yeah, real quick, 20 seconds. Smallpox was a terrible vaccine that worked very poorly. The notion that smallpox vaccine eradicated smallpox from the world is ridiculous. Less than 10% of the world's population ever received that vaccine. It was a natural eradication, just like all other viruses and bacteria eventually do. They burn themselves out, and that's what happened with smallpox.
All right, Jesse, thank you for the call. And Forrest, well, thank you so much for spending the last 3 hours. And I will track the autism vaccine on Amazon with great interest to see whether it remains available for the public. If the time comes when it is banned on Amazon, where can people get the autism vaccine?
Yeah, they can just go to theautismvaccine.com, and that will direct them to my personal store where they can buy the book directly from me. And we'll see how long that stays up.
Well, for the time being, it is available at Amazon. And again, it's The Autism Vaccine, the story of modern medicine's greatest tragedy. Well, Forrest, I got to hand it to you. You are one courageous dude for wading into this maelstrom.
I appreciate it, Richard. Thanks for having me on. You've got a lot of great questions, and I appreciate your feedback on the book.
My pleasure. Thank you. All right. I will be back tonight. But in the meantime, for George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galanti, Michael Cozio, Donna Walker, Chris Burrows, and Sean Latasor, and here in Toronto, Mike Van Dixon, Robert Turner, Patrick O'Neill, and Alex Glutch, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Until next time, so long for now.